reading from Luke that we just heard. And if you're a note-taking kind of person, which I know some of you are because at least one of you is related to me, who is, there's a sermon notes outline on the back of the service sheet that Hayley's made there if you'd like. Well, love your enemies. These words there on page 837, if you've got one of the church Bibles, Luke chapter 6, verse 27. Love your enemies. They're very famous words of Jesus. When many people think of Jesus, these are among the first words that will pop to their minds. And love your enemies are also some of the most popular words of Jesus. Even those who don't like Christianity tend to think that, oh, this is a pretty good idea, love your enemies. In fact, people sometimes say, love your enemies. Jesus said that, and he was good at that. Why aren't Christians better at that? Fair enough. And yet, if we say, love your enemies, sounds like a good idea, I'm not sure we're really taking it seriously. Love your enemies. These words might at first seem like a cute little kitten. You know, everybody loves them. But actually, if you take them seriously, if you listen carefully, they're more like a lion roaring in your face. They are a powerful challenge to us, these words. A deeply uncomfortable challenge, yet they're profound and life-changing. So, over the next two Sundays, we're going to stop and really sit with this challenge to love your enemies and the words around it. Today, we're going to look at the more outward, practical commands that are here, that kind of level, love your enemies, giving up your rights. And next week, we'll be more focused on the inward, attitudinal level, really loving your enemies. So there'll be a bit of crossover between the two, but that's the basic shape of what we're going to do this week and next week. It is worth spending a couple of weeks thinking about this and being challenged by this and letting the Lord work in us as we do. It's also worth me saying, as I did last week, at the start of this Life Upside Down series that is the Sermon on the Plain, Luke chapter 6, it's worth me saying that this teaching of Jesus was directed firstly to his disciples. And therefore, it's not saying, here's what you have to do to get into the kingdom. Rather, it's here's what we live like once we are in the kingdom. It's a set of family expectations rather than an entry test. Please do keep that in mind as we go through this. Now, as I said, although we often hear these words, love your enemies, and we think, oh, that's nice, if we really listen to what Jesus says here, our response will be more like, what? And let's really listen to those first few verses again and feel the shock. But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. What? One of our youth group members who'd been reading ahead when we were looking at Luke some months ago, read ahead and read this part, and she said, does Jesus really mean that? And I love that she asked that question because it shows she's actually listening to what he says, not just glossing it over. She's taking it seriously. I mean, turn the other cheek when someone slaps you. Give them a fresh target. When someone takes something from you, your coat, give them your shirt as well. I mean, maybe if I took my shirt off to give it to someone, they would drop the coat in horror and run away. But I don't think that's the kind of tactic Jesus had in mind here. It's much more serious than that. When you actually think about this, it seems all wrong. It seems to be opening yourself up to all kinds of being walked all over. And indeed, it's led some commentators to try to ease the shock and the pressure of this a little bit with clever interpretations. Like the idea that turning the other cheek is actually supposed to embarrass the one who hit you by showing them the wrong of their action somehow. Or giving your shirt. Well, in Jesus' day, they didn't wear trousers, so we're probably talking about a long nightshirt kind of thing, a tunic, that was the garment closest to the skin. And that may well have left you close to naked if someone took it away, if you gave it to someone. And some say that that was to embarrass the person taking the stuff from you so that they see they're wrong. And there may be something to those kind of ideas, but it's not Jesus' emphasis here, is it? Because Jesus' words come in a particular context. They come in the context of loving enemies. His words are more shocking than they are kind of interpretations to lower them. Make them, they are more shocking, more serious. This is about loving your enemies, the way you act towards them. So that's what Jesus is talking about. And it is that shocking. The next question that jumps to mind is, how? How do we possibly put any of this into practice in the real world? And the short answer seems to be, give up your rights. Give up your rights. See, throughout Jesus' words here, that's what's happening. Rights are being given up. With a slap on the face, verse 29, it's almost certainly an insult as well as physical pain. And that leaves, in one sense, a natural right to retaliation, to have our honour restored, to have retribution, to have justice, to hit back, or to get someone to do something about it. Jesus says, no, turn the other cheek. To the one who takes your coat, you have every right to withhold your coat from them as well as your shirt. Indeed, to pursue justice, to get your coat back, to make sure the one who took it gets taught a lesson. But Jesus says, no. Respond in almost absurd kindness. Give them your shirt as well. Verse 30, someone asks you for something of yours. You've got every right to hold on to it because it's yours. Jesus says, give it to them. And if someone takes what belongs to you, of course you've got the right to demand it back. Jesus says, don't. Similarly, down in verse 34, and maybe this will be close to the bone for some of us, if you lend to someone, you have the right to get your money back, to expect it back, perhaps with interest. As it says, even sinners lend to sinners and they expect to get repaid. And maybe they're also hoping that if they lend to someone in need, they'll be able to borrow to someone in need in the future, you know. What goes around comes around. Scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. But Jesus says, no. Verse 35. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. In every case, rights and expectations are being given up. The right to justice, to retaliate, to keep your stuff, to repayment. And it is radical. Rights are something we absolutely expect. They're one of the few shared values we still have in our society. Human rights, especially my human rights, are sacred. Well, Jesus is saying, give them up out of love for your enemies. Jesus includes in this little speech a part of the how that's quite key, quite important. It's there in verse 31. Have a look again at verse 31 with me. Do to others as you would have them do to you. This is the famous golden rule. I always call it the silver rule for reasons that I think are important. I'm happy to talk to you about afterwards, but I won't go into now. But this is one of Jesus' most famous phrases, especially well-known and well-loved, probably even more well-known and well-loved than love your enemies. Do to others as you'd have them do to you. Many people say they live by this, even if they're not at all interested in Jesus. But notice how radical it is here when Jesus uses it in this context. See, who are the first others that are going to be in your mind? Do to others. Who are the others? Your enemies. Because that's who he's talking about. He's saying, do to your enemy, those who hurt you, those who take your stuff, do to them as you'd want done to you. Not just the nice person, not just the person you already like, your enemy who has wronged you. And when they have wronged you, that's when you use this rule to help you work out how to treat them. So you think, well, if I had stolen someone's coat, how would I want to be treated? If I had hit someone, how would I want to be treated? If I'd asked for a loan and I might not be able to repay it, how would I want to be treated? It's radical, isn't it? It's not the way we usually think of do unto others. We usually think of it in polite, friendly, middle class, decent situations. If I was a supermarket attendant and I was working at the supermarket, I'd want my customers to be nice to me, so I'll be nice to the supermarket attendant when I go through. Do unto others. That's good. That's fine. But what Jesus is saying here is much more radical than that. He's applying this to someone who has wronged you. He says, do to them as you would want done to you. I'm to think of the person who hurts me, not how do I want them to be treated, but rather how would I want to be treated if I was them. By the way, this assumes another deep and radical Christian truth. It assumes that we would automatically realize that we are sinners just like they are, that we are capable of exactly what they have done to us. That is a radical thought when you've been wronged and you've been really hurt. Some of you know that. And if we had done what they did, if we were in their position, one of the main ways we'd want to be treated is mercy. We would want to be treated with mercy. Now that is a great but extremely hard starting point for thinking about how we respond to our enemies when we're wronged. And if we're to respond with mercy, it will mean giving up some of our rights to justice, just as Jesus describes here. And that is really uncomfortable, isn't it? When it starts becoming real like this, it's very hard. And it's natural at this point, perfectly natural, to have some worries about what Jesus is saying. I mean, if we do this, won't it lead to, well, one of the things we might be worried that it will lead to is exposing ourselves to grave mistreatment. The fact is, we don't like injustice, particularly when it's injustice against me, against ourselves. And fair enough, because God is a just God, and he's given us a strong sense of justice. And he's made us in his image, and every person is precious. So fair enough that we don't like injustice. And let me say, I don't say these things about this passage lightly. I know that there are people here, in one way or another, who have experienced very hard injustices, been deeply wronged. And those are real things. That is a real wrong. It is terrible that you've had to experience that. It is wrong. But Jesus knew about being treated badly. And yet he says these things. We need to see that Jesus here is calling us particularly to give up some of our rights to justice because we follow a Lord who gave up his rights. And we're going to see more of that later, and especially next week. We'll focus more on the kind of hard issues next week. Just how do you have the resources for dealing with this injustice and this real hurt in the way Jesus says. So hold on, if this is really pressing on you, hold on for later on today and especially for next week. But we do need to see it's a radical call by Jesus. Another worry we might have, aside from facing the really grave mistreatment ourselves, another worry we might have is feeding others' bad habits. When I was in Sydney, there were often people who asked for money who would hang around the train stations in the city, in different parts of the town. And they often had a story about needing money to buy a train ticket. And some of them probably did. But I remember when one of my bandmates, Dean, told me he'd given this lady a couple of dollars because she had a story about needing to get home on the train. And a few minutes later, he walked back down the same street and saw her come out of the shop with two Paddle Pop ice creams. And he said he wanted to go and ask for the money back. He couldn't believe it. Now, that's a pretty light version of the worry that we have here. But there is the worry of feeding more serious habits than ice creams. Drug habits, gambling habits, which is people's habit of ripping people off. But Jesus does say, give to those who ask. And our first inclination has to be to give. Not what my first inclination is, which is to find an excuse not to give. Part of our problem with that, and part of what causes me a problem there, is that we consider our money and our stuff to be ours. We've worked hard for this. But actually, at a more profound level, it's not ours. There is nothing we have that God hasn't given us or given us the ability and the opportunity to earn. It's all his. And so it's to be used for blessing others, even blessing our enemies. I'm very wary of making qualifications here because the picture Jesus paints is so concrete, so radical, and because he walks the talk. But I do want to say just one thing about this in that kind of way. The rights Jesus is telling us to give up here, the self-protective attitude that he's countering, is personal, is where we use our rights for retaliation or self-protection. But the Christian community does have a responsibility to protect the weak from those who hurt them, to protect the vulnerable from those who would take advantage of them. There's all kinds of biblical commands and examples that are very clear about God's concern and God's command to his people to care for the vulnerable and for the oppressed. We've talked about that a little bit this morning. We've seen it in Luke's gospel a number of times. So let me say, if you're in a situation where you're being hurt by someone, and especially if others in your care are in danger, it is right to get out of that situation. That's not going against what Jesus says here. It's the right thing to do, or to seek help with it. But what Jesus does call for here, and I say this knowing that it is a huge call, I feel the weight of it. He calls for love and service, even of those who might hurt us. And it is an astoundingly radical, incredibly uncomfortable word. Let me just say, by the way, as well, as a community, if we know of people who are vulnerable or who are in a dangerous situation, it's our job to help them in this kind of way. It's not going against this, or what, we better just let them turn the other cheek. No, that's their job, is to turn the other cheek. Our job's to help them, to get them out of there. So just worth saying that in case it becomes an excuse for us not helping someone else. But it is a radical call here. What would it look like for us to put these things into practice? Well, there are so many examples that will work themselves out in different ways, and you'll have to work them out. But I want to give a couple of examples to make it concrete, because what Jesus says is so concrete. These are mostly things, the examples I give, are mostly things I've either seen or been involved in. So I need to be clear that I could mention many more where I've either messed it up or missed the opportunity. But I want to give some positive examples today to help us think through how we might put this into practice. In terms of giving to those who ask, I'm often struck by the vicar of Trinity South Christchurch, who's my good friend, Dave, my old boss. I worked with him when his family lived next to a church building in Sydenham. And when you live next to a church building, you'll often get people come to the door asking for food or money and things like that. And his response was to give. He would listen to their story. He would invite them to church. But almost always, he would give to them money or food. And he did it expressly because of what Jesus says here and a couple other places where, he says, where Jesus says similar things. And I found that a great, challenging example, because his first inclination and his regular practice was to give to those who asked. I know it can go wrong. At another church where I was an assistant minister, there was a man who came along a number of times, and he seemed very interested in church, and he kind of showed a great interest in the music and in the teaching and things. And he ended up telling us a story that he had a need for a bit of extra rent money, and he had a few other needs. And after a few weeks, the vicar and I decided to give him a fair sum of money to help out with this. And one or two others, we found out from the congregation, had been giving to him a little bit here and there as well. Then a little bit later, we found out that he'd been to various churches getting money. He was a bit of a fraudster. We were very disappointed. We talked to him about it. We sat him down and had a chat with him about it. But I don't regret that we gave him the money. In the end, in the light of Jesus' words, it's better that we're ripped off than that we became hard-hearted. Having said that, we didn't think it would be good, helpful to him to keep giving him money. We made it clear he was very welcome to keep coming to church, as long as he only spoke to the minister and myself, the vicar and myself, about money. Unfortunately, he stopped coming. But you may have the understandable worry about feeding that, or feeding habits, more serious habits than paddle pops, as we saw before, drugs, gambling, those things. And I actually used to think that was a reason for not giving to people who asked, until one day I was with a Christian friend who was asked for money for food on the street by a fella. And we're in Nelson. And my friend did a simple, brilliant thing. He took the guy across the road to a shop and bought him some food. Now, that for me was radical, but it also meant another excuse was gone. This was gone for me. Now, of course, buying the man food took more time and effort. He had to spend time with him. But it also provided a chance to chat and even to share the fact that his love of Jesus was motivating him giving. See, all of those examples there are practical examples of, I think, living out the sort of thing Jesus is talking about here in the area of giving. Giving to those who ask. What about giving up our rights to justice, to vengeance? A couple of areas have struck me. Opportunities to not retaliate when we're hurt or wrong, to turn the other cheek, so to speak. One that jumped out to me that happens all the time is our close relationships. When my wife or my child says something hurtful, do I bite back? Or even better, do I store it up and wait for a chance to use it? Or do I give up my justice and decide not to retaliate? When I'm driving and someone pulls out in front of me or drives too slowly, that's a matter of justice, isn't it? Justice. Do I fly off the handle? Or do I realize in a small way, I know it's small, but actually it's very common and therefore it's very significant because it forms your character. It forms your character. Do I realize that I can love my driving enemy? Another area that I've experienced some years ago, there was a lot of gear stolen from the church I was at, including my personal drum kit. Now, if I found the person who stole my drums, let's say I went to a bar one time and there was someone playing a gig on my drum kit, and that was the person who stole my drums, how would I respond? Would I want the full measure of the law exacted against them? Justice? Well, I probably would. But should I want that? Or should I see that person as a sinner just like me, and so love my enemy? Can you see how this will affect us in all kinds of different ways, big and small? But then, if you've taken that seriously, you've got to ask, how? How can we possibly do this? Isn't this just too hard? Maybe it sounds like it almost might be possible when we're sitting here in church and it's comfortable and it's nice. But what about when we go out there and someone actually does something wrong to us? Or someone asks us for something. I'm not sure that we really want to give. It becomes real. How do we do this? That's where the drive to do it comes in. Remember, this isn't about becoming Jesus' people. It's about a response to the fact that we've already been made Jesus' people if we simply trust in him. Please hear that. If we trust in him, we are already his people. If you want to become one of Jesus' people, what you do is you put your trust in him and what he's done for you. So this Sermon on the Plain is about expressing the family likeness. And that's exactly what drives this whole passage. It's the key to it all, where the passage finishes, verses 35 to 36. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. See, when we're called to give up our rights to retaliation, or to our stuff, or to justice, we're only being a tiny little reflection of the God we serve. Be merciful as your heavenly Father is merciful, because he's given up so much more than we will ever have to. We're going to see more of this next week, but for now, let me say, in order to make us his children, to bring us into his family, despite our sin and rebellion against him, in order to do that, he has given up more than we ever could. In Jesus, he gave up eternal glory to come and save us. And he was wronged, more deeply and fundamentally wrong than we could ever be, because he was perfect and he never wronged anyone, but he was betrayed and wronged. And he was wronged by us, who were his enemies, because we had treated God, the God of the universe, as if he didn't matter. We've ignored his commands and ignored his very existence. But he didn't demand justice. He didn't demand we repay him in full. Instead, he paid for our wrongs. He did the justice in our place. And that, when you know that was done for you, that can drive you to live this out. Knowing that we're secure as his children, because Jesus died to make us his children, that'll drive it. Knowing that we have a great reward that no one can touch, because Jesus has won it for us. So we are free. We've got a great reward. We're free to be generous with everything else, because our reward is safe. Knowing that we've been forgiven more than we could ever forgive. So we're inspired to echo that beautiful forgiveness as his servants in this world. Be merciful as your Father in heaven is merciful. Love your enemies because he first loved us. Let's pray.